Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
You know, this started as a passion, as a purely personal thing, which was just for me. And then it kind of turns into something which is bigger. And you have everyone saying, can you just make everything into Japanese basketball art? And my answer was to all that stuff, I was like, I don't know. Like, this is it's a thing for me.
It's but delicate.
It's delicate. It's really for the people.
Welcome to 94 and More, presented by Bristol Studio. While a basketball court might be 94 feet, we believe it's limiting to solely look at this beautiful game as a sport. In our minds, it's closer to an art form, even a tool through which we can study the world and learn about ourselves. I'm your host, Jake Fenster, and on this podcast, we will explore the game of basketball, not only as a sport, but as a dynamic force that influences culture, builds bridges, and has the ability to shape our national conversation. Hope you enjoy. As always, feel free to reach out to us at 94@bristol-studio.com and follow us on Instagram at Bristol Studio and at 94 and More Podcast. All right, let's get into the show. Today, our guest is Andrew Archer. Andrew, thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. Longtime fan. And yeah, appreciate being here.
Yeah, excited to have you on. I know we've been kind of going back and forth for a little while and over Instagram. So it's amazing that we finally could find the time to do this. Can you share a little bit about you and your work for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar?
Yeah, I'm originally from New Zealand. I was born there. I live in Australia, in Melbourne. I guess first and foremost, I'm an artist, like just a general creative, but I work predominantly in the realm of commercial arts, so projects based around sports, lifestyle, music, and a hell of a lot of basketball.
Yeah. Was that something that you were always passionate about and interested in doing, or how did you find yourself in the position to be creating in those different fields?
To be honest, like I left school real, I didn't finish school, and I always knew I wanted something creative, and I kind of took a path where like I knew I need to be creative. I need to kind of fund it in a way. I ended up doing work, which was more, I don't know, it wasn't as like satisfying and fulfilling at the time. I did that for about 6 or 8 years.
What was that work that you were doing?
So it was still in the same area. I was still doing illustration and making art, similar projects, but just probably not the clients I wanted to be working with, you know, like things I had to kind of get away with to pay bills at the time. So it was kind of like a pipe dream to really work in a lot of the areas I do now. And the only real reason why I kind of got there was I started a project, like, not even a project. I made two artworks in about 2013 when I was living in Bangkok, actually, which were two of the original Edoball basketball pieces that I made. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even that then. It wasn't anything. It just was like, I was just like looking. I'd just gone for a trip to Tokyo as I traveled, you know, a lot back and forth, and I was inspired by some work I saw, and I came back and I was like, yo, I'm gonna put it into an idea. And normally I just do, you know, nothing really to do with sports, because I just felt like, I don't know if people cared. Like, I honestly didn't think that people cared that much about basketball, and that kind of would be, you know, I felt like it was rehashed the same way, and I kind of put it together. I figured nothing out, but I left it. I sat on it for like six, seven years, and then came back and revisited in 2018 or so. And I just looked at it open. I remember opening the works I'd made, and I was thinking, I was like, damn, like, this is me. Like, this is me, everything about me, you know. It was my passion for, like, travel, you know, certain cultures, history, storytelling, and the aesthetic of the art really matched, you know, what I was interested in. And from there, things, you know, really gave me a good opportunity to be able to pursue purely only making art for sports, really, and a few other selected things. Yeah.
So I know, you know, I've kind of seen your Instagram page, and the art is dope. I love the different pieces. But take us back into your earlier days. You know, you said coming from New Zealand, and you kind of have an emphasis on basketball. I know basketball in New Zealand, Australia has always had its tradition and culture, but it's kind of exploded, I would say, in the last decade to two decades, and really grown. So where did you kind of get your inspiration, and were you a basketballer, you know, when you were younger? kind of where did your inspiration from all this art come from?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, basketball has, as you said, it's like it has popped off in a massive way in Australia and New Zealand. For multiple reasons, I think mainly it's, you know, both these countries have been predominantly rugby, real physical.
AFL.
Yeah, AFL was, yeah. But growing up in New Zealand was exactly that. Like everybody played rugby, you know, like I'm a skinny ass dude. Like the guys there are grown men, you know?
Yeah.
Think about like Pacific Island, like Tonga,
yeah,
Samoa,
real, yeah.
Maldi, and they are like, it's like big.
They're almost engineered to play rugby. Yeah.
Oh, man, like they're 18 years old, they're ready to go. Like, so when I grew up, and you know, of course, like it's kind of like a cultural thing to follow that. Like everyone's like, yo, have a jam, play some rugby. Like I played, and you know, man, I just got slammed. Like every Sunday I go play, like I was quick and nimble, but they were as quick and they're on top of my size. And I just you know how it is when you play something big as quick, you're like, damn, where's my way to do something? So I just figured like it wasn't for me. And you know, I used to skate at the time. Like I love the culture around that, and I love the art culture around it, of like the graphics and all that stuff at the time. So I used to hang out at this park that had a skate ramp, and I used to skate at the time. And the only way that I got into playing basketball was purely one day a friend, like as he did, busted his ankle, you know, on the concrete, and someone's like, yo, we're playing 3-on-3, and they're like, yo, he's gonna play. Like, of course, I got sucked in. But and man, like honestly, it's, I had no idea how to play, but there's just something about the energy of that day I played. I was just like, damn, I knew I was gonna play this forever. I was like, it's just amazing. Like the energy it carried is crazy. And I actually made an artwork called The Fan, which is about that exact court right where I first played. I ended up playing there for all of my childhood through, from maybe since I was about, well, not childhood, I mean, it's pretty late. It's like 17 until about 23 at one court. You know, we played like, you know, it was, we played from like midday until 10 p.m.
Till lights came on.
There's no, you know, and all the same usual dumb stuff, like no stretching, you know, just just being young and like, and having fun. And like, I think the biggest thing I took away from it as well is New Zealand's always been, and I mean, Vic would know this as well from Australia, like, and much like the US, like it's a very multicultural place, but there's a lot of, you know, there's people from all areas who have like immigrated from all backgrounds and stuff. And New Zealand is like even one level higher, I reckon, than Australia. It's just a place of people from everywhere with different journeys, and everyone really wants to, you know, come together and make it one. And that's really what New Zealand is to me. And I think most people of my age, is it's beautiful people from all cultures and places just coming together and actually shaping a pretty young country in itself into what it is. And every time we went to the court, you know, we got people from everywhere there, like everywhere. They got like Thai dudes, you got like, you know, Fijian Indian dudes, Samoan dudes, Maori people, like everyone you could find. Yeah. I just thought it was a beautiful thing, honestly. I just remember, like, you know, there's not many days you can go and play basketball with like eight people from different places with different stories and religions. And then also after that, you know, you can all
form a connection.
You can go have dinner at a friend's Malaysian restaurant, and like it's just awesome.
I think what you're speaking to is really the essence of the game. And it's so beautiful because I think we all have, all three of us have our own relationship to basketball. Obviously Vic playing professionally, you know, I played through high school, and then you have your own relationship where you kind of just got thrown into the fire when someone went down and you stepped up. And I think it's very rare that you have that with most sports. I think, you know, I think basketball is a unique breed. I mean, I guess you could maybe say the same about soccer, where that could happen to you as well. But it does feel like there's something very special about that game, where it's a universal language. You can walk onto a court with people who, everyone speaks a different language, but still find commonality and you know, work together towards a common goal. For you, how much of that then did you take forward and use to use as inspiration in the art that you've been producing that's really heavily centered around basketball?
To be honest, I took everything. Like I took all of it, and I took it not only for art and my career, but just path in life that I took. You know, I've always been massively curious as to how other people lived and learning how, you know, people go about their days and what, you know, what they're thinking and how they see their futures. And I think it shaped how I lived my years after that, firstly where I lived, but in regards to art, like it opened my eyes really early to art as a global thing. Like, you know, I looked far and wide, like a lot of creatives do, you know. Obviously, Asia is a massive inspiration, all of Asia in itself. And that's at the time when I was in Thailand, like, you know, I loved the art there, out of India, of course, Japan as well. And then, you know, you got stuff from like just everywhere. I mean, I remember there was one time I was like studying like old, like Russian Soviet, not even posters, but it was before that. It was like some weird stuff, but I was just like,
yeah.
Some crazy stuff, but it's so unique that you can, it's like an endless pot of finding ideas, inspiration, and it really, I guess it does lend itself to the way I work. Like, I don't really have one fixed style. Yeah. Like, just jump around and like
kind of, yeah, I was gonna ask, how would you describe your style? But I feel like that's a hard thing, yeah, to really like nail down.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, like I was saying, in that earlier part of my career, I had quite a more streamlined style. I mean, you know how it is, like commercially, people want to know what they're getting. And that that's in regards to everything. I mean, even Vic playing ball, you know, they want to know who he is, how he plays, what he does, like what he's good at, what he's not. So everyone on a commercial level always expects you to be consistent and, you know, kind of expect, you know what to expect. But I think before then it was actually in my subconscious, a lot of the stuff I've taken from Japan in terms of aesthetic, from like Edo period art around that era, which is, you know, basically all that shaped my work, but in a more contemporary sense. And it was only around 2018 when I started making those older works, which were based on that era, but it was more true to the style of that time period, that it kind of got a bit more textural and I guess close to that time period. But overall, it's pretty surreal, you know. It's I stick with all the things I'm good at and avoid all the stuff that I'm bad at, you know. I don't render stuff. Like, I focus on the ideas about, you know, compositions that are interesting and let people who view it like kind of build their own story and their own narrative within it. Like, I really enjoy that people look at it and they're like, this is how I saw it, and then someone sees it differently, but yet, you know, they all experience their own sort of journey by viewing it. So,
Andrew, I will ask, I know, you know, in looking at some of your pieces, some of the, you know, the jerseys and the shorts definitely are basketball themed, but kind of remind me of like, you know, kind of streetwear and like street art. And I know, yeah, Melbourne is a really big hub of culture and kind of like that young adult. It seems like in Australia, like it'd be Melbourne and Sydney that would kind of try out street fashion and really be out there and trying to get into new design and fashion. Have you found it at all hard to spread your brand in Australia and try to reach, you know, like different areas like Western Australia, Adelaide, and different stuff, or is Melbourne like the central hub for where you kind of see most of your work?
Yeah, I mean, it's like super question. I always find it fascinating, like how markets work in general globally. Like, this are a new one, so, you know, you think you know it all, and like you don't realize you know nothing.
Right.
I think Melbourne more so, you know, like even Melbourne is a very AFL, as you know, like an AFL centric place. So, even though basketball's really grown, like it's still predominantly an AFL place. So I've never really gained massive traction here, except for within my own sort of bubble with, you know, everyone I play like social pickup with, massive community, obviously they're all down with it. But because I've always kind of worked globally, like I've always kind of worked with international clients, like it tends to be that everyone who kind of sees it is from that as well. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of US people, a lot of people from Japan. Just, you know, it's just the internet, right? It's just, it's
crazy. What is that like for you? Because you're taking a lot of inspiration from Japanese culture for it to be received, you know, well by them. How much does that mean to you?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, it's always a question to me because, you know, when I first started making it, it was, you know, people that are close to me knew it was of a pure passion, but obviously people Mm-hmm. You also kind of question if you're being real about it or just utilizing, you know, parts of it for whatever. But, you know, I got a lot of good friends there. And before I even did anything, you know, I looped around a dozen times saying, you know, what do you think about this? Like, how would you feel mm-hmm. about it? Does this, you know, represent, you know, parts of your experience with basketball and your life and stuff? And yeah, it's a big part of it. And I'm really glad that, you know, it's something which has just been incredibly well received. And, you know, I still daily, you know, speak to people from Japan, you know, having the work there at the NBA games in Tokyo and just talking to people there about it.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, Jake. I can't believe we haven't asked Andrew this yet. Who's your team in the NBA?
The Breakers. Oh, from New Zealand, man. You know how it is.
I thought you were going to say United.
No, I mean, Melbourne's got so many teams, right? But no, I grew up when I was young watching the Breakers, like, you know, the original when they had the kind of dream teams in the day. So, all those guys.
With Dre as the coach?
Yeah.
Lamanis?
Yeah, okay. And then they had Hanari, which was years ago. He played for the New Zealand team as well. And, mm-hmm. But I really like their team now. Like, you know, Corey and all that. And, like, those guys, like, you know, they are around the place in New Zealand all the time. So a lot of the parks and places, like, they're really part of the community. And it's a special thing for a lot of kids. And not just me, but a lot of kids now. You know?
Well, it sounds like you can come on over and be a Perth fan because, you know, they let Corey Webster go.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Perfect timing. You're looking for a new team. Vic's trying to grow his fan base out there. It's a perfect marriage.
There you go. Like, I mean, I'm a free agent. Yeah, I'm gonna go with
that. Oh, he's a free agent too.
That's the right answer. But I wanted to ask a little bit more about something you mentioned. I know you said, correct me if I'm wrong, you've done, you know, some of that more commercial work. And this sounds like more of a passion project for you. Some two things, you know, Japanese culture, which you really appreciate and admire, and also basketball culture, kind of the marriage of the two. How do you manage that, doing commercial work versus passion work and like, you know, not losing yourself along the way?
That's the best thing. And I'm sure probably all three of us have, at some point, you know, that line of being like, you know, this started as a passion, as a purely personal thing, which is just for me. And then it kind of turns into something which is bigger, and you have everyone saying, can you just make everything into Japanese basketball art? And my answer was to all that stuff, I was like, I don't know. Like, this is it's a thing for me.
It's delicate.
It's delicate. It's really for the people. And the way that it's kind of built is based around that. Like, it's the mix of Western and Eastern culture, the way the stories intertwine about both history and also, you know, modern day culture of basketball and all that stuff kind of just lends for, as I said before, like an artwork which creates a story or a moment for someone they can relate to. And I never actually saw it as being anything commercial ever. I never offered any of it. I never did any projects. To be honest, I thought no one even cared about it. I just made it for myself. It really is what it was. So now I'm very, sensitive about it. But I just want to keep it. I just want to keep it for the game, you know? Like, for the game and the people who enjoy it. You know, I don't want it on billboards for people to...
Yeah. Well, because I'm sure just from seeing your work, you know, and like Vic kind of said earlier, like, we're fans of your work. And we have, in our office in LA, we have some of your work actually hanging up, so... Yeah, we're definitely fans, but I imagine that you receive a lot of attention from, let's say, businesses that are stakeholders of the NBA that have, you know, they're looking to push their business and tie themselves to the game, and they see an opportunity with your work. And I'm saying, from a business standpoint, how do you approach those opportunities? I know you said the artwork itself might be more for the people. But what about those business opportunities that something that we say internally a lot, you know, seem like a good idea, but they're not what you really want to do? You know, how do you approach those?
Yeah, I mean, I just say, yo, let's do something new. Let's do something cool. You know, I didn't make this work as a fluke. It's not a one-off thing. Like, I'm a pro at what I do, and I can make you something cool. We don't have to do the same avenue. Like, I think that whole idea of, you know, rehashing previous work is because it's been successful in another realm. It's just a,
yeah.
In terms of a business sense, it's just a silly way to do it. You're just forcing it. You're just forcing it. And it's like me trying to shoot threes. I want to throw stuff. I want to like shimmy. I'm forcing it. If I'm shooting threes, I'm forcing it. So it's the same thing. You know, you don't want to try to take it and bend it and mold it. It loses all of its natural glow by doing it. So I always present brand new ideas. I say like, look, this stuff was cool. We can take that same storytelling and passion about something else. Let's make something new that people will really like admire and be like, this is cool. And you know, most of the time it works. I do it all the time. Like every time I feel like I'm about to end my career, but yeah.
End my career. I have a question. When creating your art and kind of speaking on the business side, do you have like a team that works with you and you kind of collaborate with, or is it just you?
No, man. I mean, I got a long time assistant. She's amazing. Janelle, she's extremely talented, like, and you know, she came in to know one thing about basketball. Now, you know, I feel like she's probably gonna know more about most games. Most games are league pass these days than me. So she's yeah, really grown, and like I'm really happy she's got where she is. And in terms of more on the business side, like I got an agent over in Europe that I've had for like almost 20 years, so like a long time. Debut art, that one who's actually more predominantly based in the arts realm. And then over in Asia, IMG, the big agency, represents me there. So yeah, I kind of a mix of everything. And you know, I do a lot of the business side of things by myself these days, down here. Like I just kind of negotiate and do those sorts of things.
Fun stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that because, you know, as a creative, every single one normally hates that stuff. But I love business. I love it. Like, I love, you know, talking about the rights and working out creative ways that everyone can benefit and everyone can be, you know, happy. And,
yeah.
And I think it's an important part of being a creative is growing in that area.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point because you see the whole thing through, right? So you're not detached. It's a very personal thing, but you're also making sure that it receives the attention, you know, on the business end that it deserves, rather than, all right, you know, I care about this, now let me hand it off to somebody else who might not really care about it. You know, you're seeing it from inception all the way through to the business deal, to the rights, to everything that goes into the specific project. Can you speak a little bit more to the actual creation of the product? So creation of whatever the, you know, let's say it's the a painting or the Edo ball book that you did. What's to go from the idea, the storytelling, you create the narrative that you want to tell, and then where do you go from there?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about storytelling. It's all about the 20 plus notebooks that I have around every house and every studio and probably in other people's houses of just ideas. Like I've got probably 100 plus ideas of Edo ball ideas and ones that I sat on for 2 to 3 years. Like, it's all about getting something that resonates and just invites imagination for the person viewing it. And it's not easy to do. Like, I definitely, you know, it's funny, I've actually finished a few editable works and then re-looked at them and be like, damn, this isn't the vibe I was looking for. It's just, so I'm quite picky with it. But the process is that the idea, you know, sketch stuff out, resketch it, redraw it again, even nicer, and then lose my mind trying to struggle
and
get a perfect color palette, which is daily grind for me. So of the book and recently making jerseys, the book was easier, got a publisher, pretty smooth, they let me design it as I wanted and stuff. But making clothing, man,
I was gonna ask that because we deal with that a lot. And I know all the nightmares and headaches. So I was going to ask what that was like for you to transition into clothing.
The most eye-opening experience of my career, of just everything I knew of the control of being able to get to where I want to get in making art, take for granted, because getting from a production standpoint, something to where you want to get it to and doing it in a nice way and trying to make a little money on the side and get everything together is the absolute biggest act. And I give you 100% bow down credit, because it's a constant challenge. It's a journey. I remember getting the first sample and I looked at it and I was like, damn, what am I going to do? I literally just I just freaked out. And my girlfriend studied fashion and she knew about pattern making and, you know, and how to talk with the lingo and all that stuff. But it still didn't prepare me for how stressful it was going to be. But I got there a year and a half later.
That's amazing. At least you survived. It's constantly refer to it as like putting out fires every day. You know, it's a challenge. That's why not everyone does it and not everyone can do it, because it takes so much out of you. But you know, if you're able to fight through and rise to the occasion and make that product, and you finally get to that stage where it's where you want it to be, it's one of the best feelings.
It is, for sure. The journey. I mean, I look back now at the journey of doing it, and I still have the bad samples that I have, and sometimes out, and I'm like, that was a special thing. Like, people always say, like, the journey is the best part, but in that case, like, it's something I'm really proud of, just for undertaking the challenge and doing it. So.
My question would be, I know you're really big and your artwork is great in the Asian culture. Have you thought about dabbling into kind of Aboriginal art or Australian or New Zealand art and kind of trying going in that route?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I think it's something I'm really passionate about, because obviously growing up in New Zealand, the indigenous people, the Maori people was a very, you know, a lot of my best friends, you know, from their background and the conversations and the dialogue and the ever-evolving climate and politics of it is touchy, and here it is too, you know. I've definitely spoken about doing it, but it's not been in that realm of basketball. It's more being like, you know, just hanging out with people who make art of that sort of area. Like a couple of friends who are Aboriginal peeps, and they, one of them is an artist actually, and you know, it's something that I don't know enough about it to be like, I want to be part of it. Like, I feel like I have to fully, truly understand and have spent my time in my core, you know, studying and knowing what they do. I really appreciate it to be able to feel that I want to partake in it. But it's, you know, I guess that speaks on Australia and New Zealand both as a whole, that I feel like there could be a much better effort to incorporate this, the people, the history, and the, you know, just recognizing their cultures as a whole. I think it's got a long way to go, but.
I know the NBL does a specific, you know, they do their heritage jerseys, right? And I was wondering if New Zealand approached you to try and, you know, design their jerseys, would that be something you'd be interested in?
Yeah, absolutely, I would. I mean, I think, you know, I grew growing up there and understanding, you know, the Maori culture and the meaning of it and, you know, the land of New Zealand, Aotearoa, the long white cloud and all the history behind it of how it came to be is definitely an area that I'm super passionate about. I definitely look into it. I mean, I know they made them and I saw them. The jerseys are quite nice. I know they've got some of like the Koru thing, the Maori like pattern down the side. And like, I thought those heritage jerseys are really nice though. I think it doesn't seem like things like that are a big step, but they kind of are. So, you know,
I thought the NBL did a great job. Like, I thought we had a meeting in Brisbane when we had ours, like they brought the artist in and she actually described the jerseys to us, right? She went through the entire patterns, what each symbol meant in her culture and why she did it. And I know it takes like it's a process, right? Like you can't just kind of redo their culture and their art on pieces. Like you have to go through a process to do it. But I thought it was really nice, like the way she explained it and the story that she told on our jerseys. Like it was pretty powerful to me.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Honestly, I guess in some ways that sums up like a large part of why I have the passion of what I do. It's just that untapped like energy and connection that you can have via things like that. So it's awesome they came and told it, explained to you, because they're special jerseys. And I'm super glad I did it. You know, it's something that's always talked about, things like that. And like people get there, but to actually execute it and be like, you know what? We're going to stand up and we're going to bring like the indigenous people right through all this stuff and make it a statement is a different thing. So, and the same with Patty Mills, you know, like Patty Mills is the same thing at the Olympics, being a flag carrier. It's a big deal.
It was awesome that they made him captain, and he was kind of like the face of the team.
I love it because he has flown under the radar on not only as a basketball player, but as a leader and a person in the community and a spokesperson and a bridge, you know, and an icon, you know. He's everything of all that. So, you know, it was hard.
He's one of the Australian all-time greats.
Absolutely, hands down. And also, you know, a lot of great, you know, Kathy Freeman, who was originally, you know, one of the medalists of Australia, was for Indigenous background as well. And they just, you know, I think it's great that they come to the forefront. Yeah, a super, I'm not even Australian, but I was, you know, had a tear when I saw Patty, like, just walking around there. I thought it was great.
I wanted to ask, to that point, what are some of your goals, you know, in any industry or just in your life? But we're kind of speaking about, you know, maybe some potential big opportunities for you. Like Vic said, designing a jersey, you know, for a team or something like that. What does that look like for you? What are the things on your bucket list that you want to achieve?
I mean, it changes day by day. Like, I always like mixing it up, but I think just working with people who really limiting down that selection of people I work with to people who are genuinely on the same energy and the same beliefs. And you'd be surprised where that goes. Like, it's some people you don't think would even have the time. Like, I remember doing this job years ago, like 4 years ago for Jared Leto. Like, and then they approached me for it with Interscope, the guy over there. I was like, oh, you know, I'll just have to make something, and all these people in the record label just tell me how they want to look, and then they were like, yo, let's do a meeting. Got on there, literally first thing Jared, like, straight on the call, he's like, yo, what do you want to do for it? Like, literally was like, what do you want to do for it? Like, how does that even happen? Something like that gives you the trust of knowing who you are and being like, you just do what you want to do. And we ended up making 4 artworks. He didn't change one thing I did. He just along the way wanted to know why I was thinking what I was doing. Like, soaking it in. I think I'm the same. Like, I just want to work with people with, you know, give that mutual respect and trust to move forward. But in terms of specific things, I've really enjoyed making, like, private commissions for NBA players, like, writing custom stories and artworks for them is something that I've enjoyed doing. I've done a few of those for some players and agents and stuff like that. I always love working with the NBA and NBPA. Like, I've done a lot of projects with them. I love, you know, they're always good people. You know, they let me do what I want, and they really respect the craft. So anything around the game of basketball would be amazing. I mean, there was actually one specific thing I wanted to do. I actually wanted, and I had most of it lined up before COVID, was to head over to Japan and actually write and film and document the whole process of like a hand-carved woodblock print being made, but almost in a documentary sort of style, you know, bringing in the player and the craftsmanship of, you know, working at this artwork, working at your game, just building up that whole narrative around the journey of it. But that's for another day, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. COVID definitely put a halt on a lot of people's plans and altered things, but, you know, I genuinely believe, based on what you just said, working with the right people and kind of putting that energy out there, I have a feeling that you'll be doing that a lot sooner than you anticipate, and it will just work itself out.
Yeah.
Well, Jake, let me ask Andrew. Andrew, how has COVID affected you in Melbourne right now? I know COVID in Melbourne and Sydney has been pretty bad, and I know you guys have been on lockdown. Has this given you more time to work, or are you kind of going stir crazy?
There's a million things to say, but overall, sum it up. I mean, I'm overworked. I thought it would be fun. I didn't think it would be as long as it was going to be. So I really was like, yo, I'm going to lock myself in here. I'm going to make some great art, take on a lot of good projects. And at first it was great. sounds like a horror movie, right?
Yeah.
At first it was great, but to be honest, I've just ran myself into the ground, just doing too much work. And like, I think you know, I underestimated the change in balance of life of not being in my studio with people, you know, not playing organized basketball, not at a high level, but playing with my friends and pick up leagues 3 times a week really affected me, you know, like it's that exercise, that social element, that happiness around that is definitely took it out of me. So, you know, when we're allowed to, you know, just because we're not even allowed to play basketball outdoors now. Right. Like, it's rough.
That's
so
tough. That's tough.
But, you know, I've got a little work done. I guess I've done some good work.
You got to look at the positives, right?
Yeah. Get off the negatives. Basketball, don't think about it.
I mean, I've tried to be trying to know that, but I think, yeah, even now I still have a big workload of a lot of big projects that I'm working on. I've been taking a lot of big things, like 3 to 6 month big projects, big collaborations and stuff, mainly because I think it's just with the stage of being, you know, inside and that, it's easier to focus on rather than the usual 6 projects at a time, which is overwhelming. And
all. Yeah. Sounds overwhelming. It sounds like a lot to deal with. Before we get, I know, wrapping things up a little bit, and I know Vic's got a question for you. And before we get to that, where can people check out your work?
So a lot of my, I guess the work in the more commercial realm was on my personal sort of portfolio, which is at andrewarcher.com. So it's just my name, first name, last name.com. And that's really a span of like everything that I'm doing. It's the basketball, it's the lifestyle stuff, music stuff, everything. So you can find that all there. And then edoball.com is everything edible, all the stories, all the artwork, you know. I'm not
perfect
holding any of it back. Like it's pretty much what the book is. And as I make them, they're up there for the people just to read and enjoy. So
yeah, everyone listening, definitely go check it out. Vic, you got it. Run away with it.
All right, now, Andrew, you know, we have the old tradition on 94 or more. Give us your Mount Rushmore of basketball.
You asked both. Australia and NBA.
Well, no, we'll do Australia and New Zealand combined. Okay. They're Mount Rushmore of basketball, and then you got to do the NBA Mount Rushmore.
So NBL, I mean, I'm probably going to take like Andrew Gaze is number one, right?
Right.
I'll probably put all the New Zealand crew in there, like Paul Hanari, Mika Vakona.
Okay, Mika. Okay, he was there in Brisbane right before I got
there.
Yeah,
I mean, he's been around the ages, so, you know, I've seen him play on the New Zealand's team. I forgot the guy's name, Bruce. He's a coach now, Bruce. What's his name? Blonde dude, small forward, power forward. He's playing for New Zealand. One sec.
Is he coaching the NBL right now?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's a coach now. I forgot what his name is. He came and coached me when I was a kid. Maybe it's like
We got to get a research intern on this pod.
Dylan Boucher. We do get a research intern.
He might be coaching. Dylan Boucher.
He's not head coach right now. He could be an assistant.
Yeah, I think he is somewhere. And then I'm going to add Ty and Corey. Ty is a fit. Just because, you know, they're both.
Ty and Corey Webster?
Yeah. That's sure. I'm representing. I'm going to tell you what this list is. This is my.
This is your own personal list.
This is my New Zealand emotional list.
Okay. This is an emotional list. Okay. Fair enough.
But when NBA is going to be, I mean, NBA could be the same. I don't know.
No, NBA. Your heart.
When we go top to bottom, or
so you gotta go. You have to put the numbers next to the names. We don't beat around the bush on this podcast.
All right. Okay. I'm gonna say number one.
Vic loves that.
Yeah.
Celebrating.
You know what? It's very close because number two would be. It's a tough one for me to put 2 and 3 there, but I'm going to say Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon.
Okay.
Absolutely is. I mean, yeah, this is a bit of an emotional list for sure.
No, go ahead. It's fine.
Three, I would say.
Three's tough.
It is tough. Since I've got so many names in my head and I still am going to tie it to someone really important to my career and life, I'm going to say Kevin Garnett.
Okay.
Wow. We got someone put Kevin Garnett. Where did Jay Lee put Kevin Garnett, Vic? Did he put him third or fourth?
He put him pretty high. No, he put him high, though. It was like 4 or 5. He put him high.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that one of value. I mean, yeah, as I said, it's definitely emotional.
I don't even think I had KG in my top 30.
I don't think you did either.
I know.
I think he's the one that got away.
And then I'll put Jerry West.
Okay.
Okay.
And then at the 5.
No LeBron.
Yeah, you know, this is where it gets tricky. Yeah. I mean, I probably been, no.
You didn't say Kobe either, so I know Jake's over
there now. You know that I put that KG at three, so you know that I'm coming from a place of LeBron battles. You know that it's hard.
Yeah, he's scarred. Yeah, he's scarred.
So, I mean, five, I'm going to say the big guy, Oscar Robinson.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was an interesting five compared to the ones we've heard in the past.
Yeah. I mean,
not for better or for worse, just it was different.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you. I won't tell you who said it, but the best five I've heard is Michael Jordan, number one, Michael Jordan on the Wizards, number two, and then rookie year, Michael Jordan, number three. I won't tell you who said it, but
definitely not the guy from Chicago. Definitely not the guy from Chicago. I'll tell you that much.
You know, there's probably a lot of other better players, but I find that a lot of them in there are actually just people I find inspirational as well as players.
Are there any NBA teams that you actively watch and support? Or are you just kind of a fan of the overall game?
No, hell yeah, I've got teams. I'm just not that proud of them at times. Like,
What are your teams?
You know, well, when I first started basketball back in the day, KG was the guy.
Okay.
It was him and Duncan who were doing it. So I was like, yo, I'm going to pick KG of the two. I just started to try and model my game after him. So naturally, I was like, yo, what team you play for? What team is it? So I was like, at first, I was like, damn, this is a good life. You know, he's MVP. Things are going well. But now, man,
now you got Carl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell.
No, come on, Jake. He's got
and Anthony I like
Edwards.
Him.
He's got Anthony Edwards.
All right, Anthony Edwards.
Put the future in there.
All right. You're right. Sorry, I was thinking about. I wasn't giving them the credit for the future. My apologies.
I don't mind Jaden McDaniels either. Mm-hmm.
Like, no, he's good. Yeah. No, their young core is good.
They got good young players.
He's got good wingspan, good sticks. So
and Patrick Beverley now, so they're a playoff team already.
I'm spoiled. I'm used to the Lakers. That's my team. So what we do is whenever we're not winning, we sell everybody and then buy the most expensive free agents. Yeah. We just trade them all away.
It's funny. I've got a friend and we play fantasy all the time and he's a Lakers dude. Same thing. But he's proud of it. He's like, yo, this year we're going shopping again.
I don't love it, but obviously it works and we get rings. So who am I to like complain about it? But I will say I did like the young, core we were building with Lon. I'm a big Lonzo Ball fan from UCLA. I liked Julius.
The young core you were building, you guys shipped them out as soon as you got them.
I know we had them, and then it was like, well, we can go get Anthony
you guys traded
Davis.
Every piece of the young Goodbye. Core away.
I know.
Today, the oldest team in the league.
I know, but I can't be mad about it because we won a ring with Anthony Davis. So like technically it worked. But
boy, I hope you guys lose the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean
that won't happen.
Yeah, it's always a big like controversial argument, right? Because I've always been a fan of like the team that's you know got the hope and has got it. Like the Bucks, I always followed like in the West and the East the team, and there was always the Bucks in the East as well. Like I watched them in their Michael Grant days, and you know that's why I also
were you happy they won the finals?
Absolutely, like I really was. Like I mean, I love a lot of their players. I love Middleton and Drew, what they stand for, like the way they play. Mm-hmm. They're really like likable.
Yeah. We kind of grew up in that era too of, you know, teams, like you build your team, you had a superstar who stayed and they built that team over time and had a, you know, loyal fan base and you kind of ride and die together. So I think it's interesting to adapt to the new style of basketball, you know, of roster building. It's kind of like,
it's changed,
an AAU team, you know, get your AAU team together and it works and it's what you have to do to compete. You know, you see the Nets, the Lakers, like, but obviously the Bucks winning was a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the same style, but that's why we're so emotionally attached to our players. You know, Vic's a big Chicago guy. Hey, he grew up watching it.
What about you, Vic? Who's your NBA team? Who's your NBA team? And who's your, maybe NBL players. Like who's in the league now or when you were here, whose game did you really look at and be like, damn.
Who did I like in the NBL? I like Bryce Cotton. Mitch Norton,
Todd Blanchfield. Are you just naming teammates on your new team? Are you just naming the roster?
But seriously though, when I got to play at the NBL for the first time, you know, I really respected Sobe.
Yeah.
I thought Jason Kidd was a great, good basketball player and really one of the better leaders I had ever played with. I thought Abercrombie on the Breakers was good. You know, obviously Cotton was a problem.
Yeah, I mean, he should have definitely been on my NBL team because Abercrombie was.
I mean, he's been there forever, right?
Yeah, forever. And on the New Zealand team, a big part of it. So, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah.
Dre actually had some pretty cool stories about Abercrombie when he won the title on New Zealand, how Abercrombie was a development player, but had worked his way into the lineup and then started in the grand final and played great. So I thought Abercrombie was good. You know, I thought Jarrell Martin, Casper Ware, like I think the NBL, in all honesty, like I think it's gotten a lot more visibility and respect over the years. But, you know, when I came over, right, like I thought every team has like their guys, right? Every team has guys that have realistic opportunities to go to the NBA or have the talent that they could have played in the NBA. Like, you know, Isaac Humphries and Daniel Johnson on Adelaide, they had Giddy as well, who then got drafted. But, you know, every team has a couple guys that are like legit players that, you know, any given night can explode for points or just change the game. So I think the NBL is, you know, really doing well. But in America, I know. Huh?
What do you think about the style of game, the difference? Because, you know, playing here, that it's the way it's playing in Australia and Europe compared to the U.S. is different.
Coming from America, right, where the game is changing to smaller basketball, much more jump shots, like you want to pace and space, right? Like you want to get out first 7 seconds, if you can get an early three or early attack to the basket, that's what you want to do. And then, you know, you got your centers that you have these massive centers, but more times than not, they space the floor and they're not just sitting in the paint. Yeah. And in NBL, right, there's no defensive 3 seconds. Yes. You have a lot of true five men who don't really space the floor, but they're really good in the paint. Yeah. And teams do a great job scouting, right? Like when I played for the Bullets, teams scouted me very well in mid-post. They would double me. And then the spacing, right? Like you have to really adjust the spacing since you're playing with a traditional five, sometimes a traditional four. Mm. And teams can load up and help, right? Like it felt like I was playing in the Big Ten again. Super physical, super good coaching. And the floor is kind of tight because you have to play against a loaded defense every night.
Yeah, it is loaded. It definitely is. I never noticed. It was only when I lived over in Thailand, I started playing the U.S. Embassy over there. And, you know, they were playing basically the NBA style game. And I was like, damn, man, the space is nice. It is nice. Play here.
The NBA tries to emphasize offense so much. Like, the floor is so open. And officials give the offense way more leeway than they do defense. And I feel like the NBL, the officiating is up and down, but I feel like they give defense more so the leeway than they do offensive players. Unless you're on Perth, you know, and you know, it's not gonna hurt being on Perth. So
do you think it improved your game in a specific way by playing here?
I do. Like, I actually do. So I think playing under Coach Lamontis, I think he taught me a lot about using like angles and being able to get my shot off. Right, like, because in NBA, I felt like playing against – so I feel like in the NBL, you still have size, right? But I feel like you have size much more to the right side of the lineup, right? And that's power force and ton of size there. In the NBA, you kind of have size and length throughout the lineup that they want to be able – like, now teams want to switch pretty much 1 through 4, get up the court and pressure you. And so, a lot of my game is, like, you know, mid-range pull-ups, ISO buckets, like I'm playing off, you know, screen and pops or pin downs coming up. And a big thing was like creating space for myself, like step backs, fading away a little bit, shooting over guys. And in NBL, you know, Coach Lamontis was really big on just getting to a spot and raising up, right? Like you don't need to create that extra amount of space. Like you're taller and athletic than some guys. But in the same instance, you have to understand that the floor is a little more clogged. So you're not just going to be able to beat your one guy and then get to the basket. Like there's more times than not going to be a guy in the plug spot and be a guy at the rim. So you have to have these different moves ready and counters. And so I thought I was better for it. Like I really do think I was better. Like it was just unfortunate that I got hurt. Yeah. But I thought I learned a lot in the NBL. And it matured me both as a person and as a basketball player. So
definitely as like a viewer hearing that and watching you play in summer league, I feel like I saw that confidence kind of come through. Like I saw you make some moves in and around the paint, like kind of knowing the second guy, whatever, was going to be further behind. Like you didn't really have to worry as much. So you were more comfortable making your moves. And so I guess, you know, it sounds like that's kind of where it came from, was like, you're so used to analyzing what the next, you know, I can get through one guy, second guy's coming from here, third guy's coming from there. And in the NBA, that's not really how guys play.
I mean, you might have like a super athletic shot blocker that's going to try and come over, but he's not like in there already. You know, he has to kind of do the 2-9 rule. Yeah. And it's funny, like in interviews, you've heard Luka Doncic say he feels like it's easier to score in the NBA than it is internationally, just because refs don't really call fouls. Like, you know, you don't have the sweep through foul. You don't like all that, like stop and go, like kind of jump back into the guy, shoot it. And the floor is not as open, right? Like, you have guys constantly cutting, moving, the center's posting up. Like, you have guys constantly in the lane. And because of that, it's harder to drive and just beat your man. Like, you have to beat more than one guy internationally, right? And NBA, I feel like you really have to, like, beat your defender, who more times than not is a good defender. And then once you get by him, like, it's kind of on you and your touch and your skill to score over that big that's going to rotate over.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's super fascinating.
There was, even though, you know, there's enough people on the paint already with the 3 seconds, no 3 seconds, the amount of zone they play, just packing the paint if you can't.
Been an adjustment, I'm sure. Well,
you might have to start stepping back and shooting some threes, huh?
Yeah, you might have to adjust your game.
I'd say, you know, if the clock's under two, I'm feeling
if the clock is under two.
Clock's under two, I'm shooting it. I'm shooting it.
Otherwise, you know, I know my thing. So
Andrew. Appreciate you taking the time to do this and to share with us, you know, your story and everything. And we're definitely looking forward to having you back on in the future.
Yeah, I like this. And I appreciate the invite and just overall appreciate what you guys are doing. You know?
Andrew, please get my – I'll follow you right now.
Please, yeah, you guys have to meet up.
When I get to Australia, you know, if I'm in Melbourne or you want to come to Perth or whatever, please let me know and I'll give you tickets.
Man, I'll be there 100%. I'll be the biggest fan. I might start calling, telling people to get out of the paint. I might just say, get out. You guys, get out. I want to dunk one time. Just get out of the paint one time. No, I really appreciate that. We'll definitely make a good effort once, you know, things clean up with the COVID. And hopefully, get on to it. So you're going to be in Perth?
Yeah, I will.
That is awesome. Congratulations.
I leave mid-September or mid to late September, and I'll get there, do my quarantine, and hopefully get out and get about.
Cool. Super happy that you're healthy and, you know, the bounce back is there.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it, Andrew. We'll talk soon.
Easy, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. This podcast is presented by Bristol Studio, sound editing by Rashad Allen, music by James Grissom.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.